Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Get more of the sports you love on Sports Extra with BT Sport and Premier Sports.
Welcome along. It's the football show. Pat Nevin is with us. Pat, great to have you on. How you doing?
I'm very well. A little bit tired. I've just had my 7-hour drive back from London after being at the game yesterday. And for a whole 7 hours, I thought about the game and the consequences of pre and post the game, and not just the football as well. So it's been interesting.
Yes, I'm sure it has. Well, I do want to talk to you about Chelsea, as you can imagine. I might start with, from a global point of view, the headline news which has broken this evening. I'm sure people are increasingly aware. So FIFA and UEFA have acted in unison to suspend Russian teams from international competitions, which means no World Cup for the Russian international team, no Europa League, no Women's European Championships, and any other team you care to mention, it's not happening. UEFA have also announced they are cutting their Champions League sponsorship with Gazprom, which was worth about €40 million per year and has been long running. Gazprom, of course, owned by the Russian state. So this has been a bit of an ordeal for FIFA to get here. I was struck Wembley yesterday when the applause went out and on the screens with the Ukrainian flag, it said football stands together. Football really wasn't standing together at that point. I would put it to you, given the actions in particular of the Polish FA, who came out in response to the Football Union of Russia idea and neutral venues, and they said this was unacceptable, we're not interested in the game of appearances, and they called on the expulsion of Russia, followed swiftly by the Swedes and the Czechs, who are locked in this four-team playoff World Cup situation. Once they made their stance as clear as they did, followed by other associations across today, FIFA had no option and really were shamed into action, you would have to say.
FIFA have shown over the years to be completely and utterly tone deaf to what you should be doing and what you should be thinking and how you should be acting and when you should be acting. They're utterly tone deaf. And the fact that they had to, I don't know about shamed into action, the fact that they thought it was okay to go ahead with these games but not you, and they thought that was a good idea 24 hours beforehand. Honestly, it beggars belief, you know, that they're so far away from how the vast majority of the people on this planet think. It staggers you. It's beyond belief how they could be like that. And if they're going to try and get any brownie points whatsoever for actually making the right decision eventually, You're absolutely right. The fact that those teams refuse to play, do you think say they got a buy-in to the World Cup, do you think anyone would have accepted playing against Russia? So that's not a decision by FIFA. That's not a decision by them. That's you have no alternative. You're doing this. They embarrassed themselves. Okay, so they only embarrassed themselves for 24 hours on this occasion, or maybe 48. But, I mean, honestly, how can you be that deaf to it all? I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I'd love to have been in the meeting where they come up with that original idea. You know, no, you can play in a neutral ground, and you know, get lost. And again, it was against Poland, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did they know the history of Poland and Russia? Have they any concept of it at all? Honestly, they've done some daft things and some stupid things and some grotesquely thoughtless things in their time. This gets there. This is right up there with it. And you know, I'd not in the top with that. The fact that, you know, in hindsight, I mean, I loved Russia when I was there. I loved my time there. I thought it was a really well-done World Cup, and also the people of Russia were great. But when you think of the reasons why it was probably done, and then you stick on the next World Cup on top of it, I mean, honestly, how FIFA can hit anyone from FIFA, particularly Infantino, can hold their heads up. It's beyond belief. So if you have to bounce them into it, then we'll bounce them into it, and everybody will bounce them into it. But one day they will make a decision that's the right decision on their own. But I wait with interest.
Yeah, so tawdry. And it is a point to reflect on how sport, but so in this instance, the specifics of the FIFA situation, football, is so willing and so able to afford soft power to a country like Russia in return for money. And there is no doubt in the memory banks of us all that Russia 18 and this wonderful carnival of football and the reports from people coming home talking about how much they enjoyed their time in Russia. People had a great time. There is no doubt that that does compete in the general memory bank with things like Georgia in 08 and Crimea in 14 and attempting to rig a US election and LGBTQ rights. And in effect, the fact that we all know that this guy's a dictator, you know, there's no democracy at play here. You can see the appeal of that for Russia in so many ways. And this is where it comes to haunt an organization like FIFA, when there is a requirement for some kind of ethical, moral stance. Can you imagine Gianni Infantino, presented, by the way, with a Medal of Friendship not so long ago by Vladimir himself? Can you imagine what a weird few days he's had?
I wouldn't want to think about it, because basically he should be keeping the lowest profile he humanly possibly can in this situation. Look, having said, let's take another point. We all know what we feel here, so we can all be quite smart and have a dig at him and have a dig at FIFA, right? Okay, we've done that, been there, understand that's the case, right? Let's take it to its logical conclusion, which I suspect you, Joe, knowing you well enough, you're going to do that anyway, right? So when do they make these decisions, right? Someone had a great example to me the other day, and it was the fact that back in the old days of 2 or 3 days ago, when St. Petersburg lost the Champions League final, it was moved to Paris because, you know, they'd invaded a sovereign country. And someone said to me, yeah, but didn't Britain invade a sovereign country when they invaded, you know, Iraq, and they were doing the Champions League that year? Mm. And as soon as you get in to these governing bodies making decisions, and we know this is a very obvious one, but then you will get into very murky waters. And it's not just FIFA, it's the IOC. You know, what you're doing in China with the Uyghurs, when is that the decision you should have made? You know, and then you slowly but surely go down a path of, where do you draw the line? No, I do not believe this.
I think that's a great point to raise. And FIFA, I hate this phrase, in fairness to them, FIFA have been loath to almost adjudicate on conflicts for a very, very, very long time. And the Saudi Arabia-Yemen situation has been thrown at them even subsequent to this decision. So, like, I think it's a valid issue to raise.
And it is, and it goes all the way down to, you know, the recent Scotland-Israel game. And there was plenty of people that were standing outside there saying, well, wait a minute, they've got their issues towards Israel, etc. So it is difficult where you draw the line. But when you see something that's so blatantly obvious that the entire planet agrees in, just about, apart from possibly Belarus, and maybe China a push. Can we throw in North Korea maybe? But we don't care. It's kind of obvious, that one, you know, and that's a simple one.
Yeah. It's when they've had such close ties, I suspect, as well. You know, like the Saudi Arabia Yemen situation. Like, there are just a gazillion moments where Putin and Gianni Infantino have been together and money has changed hands and they're so in bed together. That's the aspect of this that's uncomfortable, I think, and where people feel, you know, this is just, like I said, very tawdry and a wrong relationship with the wrong person.
But isn't that the case generally with football anyway, and sports? They chase the huge money and they chase it everywhere, you know, and so, you know, where does the morality start and stop? I've got lots of friends who were big Man City fans and don't support Man City anymore, you know, but the vast majority still do. Hmm. Because of the ownership of Manchester City. And I don't judge them, because, you know, in the end, football clubs is a different argument. And it's a personal argument. You make your own decisions. And, you know, I will have my own thoughts on various things, and they will as well. But this is slightly different from the sliding scale. There is a sliding scale, but there's a top of the mountain before you jump off of your skis. Well, you know, I know where the right is here. I don't actually feel sorry for them, because if you get into that job, you're there to make those decisions, and you're there to make the right decisions, and you're well remunerated for it, and you will pay the cost if you make those decisions incorrectly. And there are lots and lots of benefits of power and wealth. There's also downsides as well. You've got to answer those questions, and you know, you better have a good answer, and you better have a decent moral answer as well. And I just don't think in this occasion they had a moral answer. No. And the other one's the moral answer, which you're arguing for, not you're arguing for, but we know the argument, which is quite simple. You know, when do you stand them? When do you make a decision? When, as soon as they make a decision on other less clear cut from some people's viewpoints, war zones or, you know, in factions for countries going into other countries, then somebody will turn around and say, so when did you become, you know, guardians of the universe? Mm. When did you get the right to do that? Where, of all the people you want to have the moral superiority to make the decisions, I don't think you FIFA are the people that you want to do it. So you're right. It's never completely and utterly simple. But if it ever gets damn close to simple, this was the one. Yeah. And they got it wrong.
They did. Yeah, it was shameful. It was really shameful. I hope it's not forgotten too quickly.
Off the Ball's the best, number one.
It's the GOAT of sports apps.
Talk about the greatest of all time. Big Joe's the greatest of all time. He's the GOAT. We know it.
I'm going to say, like, I'm the Djokovic of this scenario.
Love it. Love it.
Download the OTB sports app now.
So let's move on to Chelsea then, because the situation here is fascinating. I'm sure it was the talk of you and other Chelsea players and members of staff and whoever else you were bumping into at Wembley. So Liz Truss, yesterday on Sky News on Sunday morning, she was saying we have a hit list. And I know, and again, you're straight into Whataboutery. We can talk Tories and Russian money and Moscow on Thames very easily. But let's proceed for the purposes of time with Liz Truss and her hit list. We are targeting oligarchs, private jets, will be targeting their properties, will be targeting other possessions that they have. And she was criticised in the interview because only 8 oligarchs thus far have been subject to sanctions. And Truss was saying that, look, there's paperwork, it's not easy. There'll be legal action opposing the moves. So we're trying to get our ducks in a row effectively. She was asked specifically about Roman Abramovich, and she said, I'm not naming individuals. Now, as we know, on Saturday, Abramovich put the club in the, quote, stewardship and care of the team's charitable foundation. The Daily Telegraph reported that the foundation trustees hadn't even accepted that responsibility, and Saturday was the first they had heard of it. And as for what stewardship and care mean in legal terms, nobody is quite sure, but we don't think a whole lot.
I suspect nothing.
Yes, yes. I suspect nothing. And so that was where we were. And then, of course, just to make this whole situation a touch more strange, the British publication, The Jewish News, broke news of Abramovich involved in some kind of peace talks, which his spokesperson then confirmed. I can confirm that Roman Abramovich was contacted by the Ukrainian side for support in achieving a peaceful resolution, and that he's been trying to help ever since. Considering what is at stake, we would ask for your understanding as to why we have not commented on neither the situation as such, nor his involvement. Thank you. End of the statement. And then there were comments from a Ukrainian film director, producer Alexander Rodniansky. I'm not too familiar with his work, but I suspect he's a big deal. He's been widely quoted. I can confirm that the Ukrainian side have been trying to find someone in Russia willing to help them find a peaceful resolution. They are connected to Roman Abramovich through the Jewish community, reached out to him for help. Roman Abramovich has been trying to mobilise support for a peaceful resolution ever since. Although his influence is limited, he's the only one who responded and taken it upon himself to try. If this will have an impact or not, I don't know. But I am in contact with the President Zelensky's staff and know they are grateful for his genuine efforts. So whatever about the peace talks ongoing, what about Chelsea and Abramovich's move, presumably in anticipation of some kind of sanctions coming his way?
Yeah, well, certainly the possibility of sanctions. And I was thinking originally of sporting, you know, organisation sanctioning, as well as governmental sanctions as well. I think the governmental ones will be more consideration to him personally. But I would actually believe the one thing that he said, that he's got Chelsea's interests at heart when he's tried to do that half step away, and I call it a half step away, and that's being generous, because it's less than a half step away. But I do actually think he cares about the club. See the stuff like the $1.5 billion he's put into it, it's kind of loose change for him. I don't think that's a kind of big deal for him. I think he's trying to find a way around it. The difficulty is you kind of need to stand up and say something at some point. Now, we've all been waiting for it. Chelsea's statement, the second statement, the first statement was, I don't think anyone was particularly fooled, it was other than a a kind of holding statement, not much more than that. It wasn't even particularly well thought through because they hadn't really checked it out with the trustees of the charitable foundation. So that was a bit odd. Then the next day, something definitely had to be said. And I was on the BBC and I was saying, look, you've got to make a comment about, you know, what's going on in Ukraine. And they did make a comment about what's going on in Ukraine, a very short statement about their caring. But there was no mention of who was doing it to Ukraine. So the half-hearted efforts aren't really going to work. Now, I was thinking, I don't know where you're going here, because if Roman stepped away, that's allowed a club to say what you like. So someone can make a statement and it doesn't reflect on Roman because he's away from it. And I almost half kind of cleared it that he was able to do that. But then that statement comes out. And then the final one that you're talking about, the fact that he is having some involvement. And then you kind of slightly pause, because if he is having involvement and we have a right dig at him beforehand, and he actually has some effect on it, and a positive effect on it, then we're jumping the gun too quickly there. So I'm slightly loath to do that for that reason. Not for the reason I have any involvement in Chelsea, because in the end, if they want to do what they're going to do, the government, the British government, to Roman Abramovich, and they do it, there's two or three ways around it. I don't see how he can fund it as a third party. I think that's, I don't even know if that's legal. The other way is you sell it, if he sells it, and there will be plenty of buyers for the club, and there will be wealthy buyers for the club, and they'll be safe in that way. In a slightly light-hearted and a very unlight-hearted moment, then they could always just run within their means. Now, to be fair, they've been trying to do that for 3, 4, 5 years. And as much as they then blow it by spending 95 million quid on a striker that they not necessarily needed at that point in time. But they could survive, but they'd have to restructure, and that would take some time. It wouldn't be the same club after a period of time unless they got a massive owner in. So he's in a really, it's a very strange up in the air position at the moment. The most disappointing thing for me, I would like to have had some comment about the Russian, they could call it war, they could call it, you know, their invasion. Illegal.
Yeah.
Invasion, you could call it anything you like, but there wasn't even a mention of the word Russian in it. And that, I think most people just thought, and I did as well, I was really disappointed and never said anything about that, because we're in a war situation now, you've got to say it. And maybe the only argument, and I didn't see it, but the only argument is I'm doing something quiet on the other side. Can I make some other suggestion? I was thinking about it today. See, he's dealing with Vladimir Putin, and he actually, it's alleged that he knows Putin. Nobody knows if he knows him, but it's alleged that he does. And he's trying to deal with him, right? Do you think Putin's 100% sane? Trying to deal with somebody who's in that extraordinary position. You really need to tread quite carefully and don't trip yourself up before you can get as far as you can get. I'm not trying to make excuses for him, but I also wouldn't want to wreck any tiny wee chance of a help towards peace before it had a go. But I don't think there's a lot of time for the likes of Roman Abramovich personally to come out and say, right, this is what I tried to do. And either A, did help, or B, didn't help. And then find themselves in a position where, you know, the Western governments, particularly UK, will be after him. Absolutely, they'll be after him for his finances, without a doubt. And, you know, there's positives about being a billionaire. You get wealth, you get levels of power, you can get all the trinkets, etc., that you want. It's also a downside. You've got to stand up for things now and again. You've got to, and you can't duck it. And I don't think there is a ducking anymore. And I think we'll find out in the next 3, 4, 5 days.
Yeah.
The situation with him personally. You notice I talk differently between him and Chelsea Football Club. And although he's the owner, you remember the original statement? The original statement was interesting because it said a number of things. There was quite a bit of fluff in it. But there was a word in the middle of it, which I don't even think was deliberate. And he'd said he was custodian. And that's a kind of big thing. Because that's the thing that I think football fans hold on to. Because if they're fed up with a club, and many people are fed up with their owners, There's lots of people fed up with their owners, but they're custodians. They're not there forever. Mm. And that's why people stick with their clubs.
I mean, that's a brilliantly considered answer. I do agree with you. I think there's probably a few days grace whilst this rather bizarre peace talk story blossomed up to, well, let's see where this goes. But it probably only is a few days.
It is, yeah. I mean, I'm not giving no green cards, no passes for this.
No.
Let's find out.
Yeah, sure. On the wider issue of his time then at Chelsea, just in the past few days, I mean, I think everybody at large has been reminding themselves just how the oligarchs came to wealth in the 90s and the assets of Russia privatised and pounced upon, frankly, by a small number of individuals, and Abramovich made his great wealth. And that's, you know, that's one thing. And billionaires the world over tend to have, you know, it's hard to become a billionaire by abiding by all the rules and doing everything perfectly. And, you know, I think people are generally aware that these kind of things go on. So there's that. But then there is also now his alleged closeness with Putin, which has become incredibly toxic and very difficult for him to escape in the eyes of the British public, I would say, as much as anything, and the Chelsea fans. Now, just to echo what you've said, Abramovich has disputed reports suggesting his alleged closeness to Vladimir Putin and Russia. But, you know, for instance, under parliamentary privilege, I'm sure people saw this, Chris Bryant of the Labour Party, he said on Thursday he'd obtained a secret 2019 government report on illicit finance, and he cited Abramovich for, quote, his links to the Russian state and his public association with corrupt activity and practices. Surely Mr. Abramovich should no longer be able to own a football club in this country, is what Chris Bryant had to say there. And then, you know, for instance, Guardian 2018, just to give a sense for people who just, you know, Abramovich arrived and they didn't think much of it and they watched Chelsea and that was that. Their relationship goes back a long way, said The Guardian. Abramovich was one of Putin's early supporters, recommended him for the top Kremlin job to Boris Yeltsin when Russia's ailing leader was looking for a successor. And then they base a lot of this on the evidence of Boris Berezovsky, who was a late oligarch. He was given evidence to the High Court in London. And he said, Abramovich enjoyed a significant political influence in Moscow from the second half of the 90s. In October 1999, he attended Putin's birthday party. Soon afterwards, he allegedly bought Putin, then the Prime Minister, a $50 million yacht. This, by the way, is something Putin has denied. The request came from Putin. By the time Putin became president in 2000, Abramovich played a key role in shaping the new government. Berezovsky's evidence added that Abramovich selected members of Putin's cabinet. Abramovich had the power to open and shut criminal cases and to initiate investigations and arrests, it was alleged. He was, in short, a big Kremlin player, albeit one who operated behind the scenes. And in 2005, he sold Sibneft oil to Gazprom for $13 billion. Again, Abramovich denies this, but obviously people are saying this, and they're saying this in the High Court, and serious people in Parliament are saying this. So long points made. Maybe it comes down to the next few days and the extent to which Abramovich may disassociate himself from Putin, I don't know. But it feels like the British public will not stand for Abramovich owning Chelsea Football Club anymore.
It feels like that right now, absolutely. To be honest, there's a lot of them weren't standing for it beforehand. There's nothing much you could do about it. And, you know, I hate that whataboutery kind of thing, as we say in Scotland, you know, but it's taking a lot of pressure off Man City, it's taking a lot of pressure off Newcastle.
Sure, yeah.
And maybe that's the wider point, isn't it? Because the reason why English football is where it is, and it's leading the world, is where it is, is because they've accepted money and they've not really cared.
Yeah.
They've not really bothered. They've just said, we'll accept the money. And unless it's, their argument has always been, I think, prove it's a problem legally. Prove it's a problem legally and we'll say it's not a fit and proper person to own. That's always what it comes down to. And there are cleverer people than, let's be honest, you and I, that use lawyers and use sovereign wealth funds and use a variety of different ways to manipulate their way in. What I do applaud is every journalist who goes and digs into every single one of these stories. And if they find a story and back it up and they can make it legal, everyone then can get behind it. And we've already seen in football very recently that when the public gets motivated to do it, they can make big changes. They killed the Super League in days.
Mm.
You know, and if they've got the absolute certainty of legal backing behind it, you wouldn't be surprised. Do you know what I'm slightly surprised by? Abramovich, he absolutely does. He loves Chelsea. He loves the whole thing, right? He really likes it. Is it worth the hassle for him anymore? It clearly still seems to be. But is it really worth the hassle for him? The amount of buyers that must be out there. And I don't know about you. Just if I was at a business and it was causing me that many headaches and he's that amount of front and that amount of publicity, would you need it? Would you want it?
Mm.
So I have to say, I look at him sometimes and I think, why'd you do that, mate? And now, I've talked to him. I've been in a company a few times and I've spoken to him. Doesn't speak back. He doesn't say anything. He just comes across as an incredibly shy guy, right? It's really weird. It's exactly what you don't expect him to be, right? It's very, very strange.
Mm.
Either that, he's just weighing you up and looking at you. But I just don't know where he's coming from half the time. I don't even know where he's coming from right now. Because in this situation, what's the upside for him? Other than the fact that, does he love the club that much? Well, it appears he does. He's given them $1.5 billion.
I think you're right, because he's the only oligarch I could name off the top of my head. And there's a reason on Sky News, the first question they said was, well, are you going after Abramovich? Because it's probably the only oligarch that they could really name off the top of their head. So it does make him a very nice target for Liz Truss on her hit list, you know?
No excusing. I'm not excusing. I'm just, when I talk about things like this, I mean, I don't actually have any stake in Roman Abramovich either way, to be honest, because, you know, if people say, ah, but you're Chelsea will be bought by the next billionaire along the road.
Mm.
They're such a huge organization.
Yeah, no, I agree. Do you think this could mark a change in the Premier League's openness to billionaires coming in, buying whatever club they want, and we won't ask any questions? Do you think this might be a line in the sand?
That's a great, great question. I think things change when we sometimes don't expect them. But wars change things when we do expect them. And this is a war. And if this war keeps on going for any period of time, and Russia is absolutely a pariah state, we're into a new realm of world realpolitik. You have to change it. Geopolitics. You have to change the way you look at things. So yeah, it might start people saying that. I wish people did understand that. And I think probably deep down they probably do. The reason, as I say, that the English Premier League is where it is because they've got a lot of money and a lot of it. They would be a good league anyway, but be fair, where they're getting gigantic amounts of money from most of the big teams, you kind of raise your eyebrows and that's been kind to it. So they have to accept that. If they're not going to accept that and there is going to be the sea change that you're suggesting or is a possibility now, well, they better accept that this is a different league. Now, whether they have got themselves into such a world-dominating position that they could go and make those monies elsewhere or the market changes, who knows? Because these oligarchs and sovereign wealth funds and countries even, they've changed the landscape of this more than anyone.
Mm.
The increases in costs, etc., when you look at the economics of it, they've spiraled incredibly. And it's not just players wanting more money. It's actually the fact that they just pumped in that more money and just made it that exceptional. But remember, you know, if you live long enough, Italy were in a position many years ago, and there was a lot of corruption there at the time as well. But they were in a position of world leaders and we kind of almost didn't question it. And England's in that position just now. Maybe it doesn't last forever. Maybe it will be a sea change. Maybe it's not the worst thing in the world because, you know, it's a good league. They're actually now good at developing their own players in England. Maybe a sea change wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Mm. Well, on that point, a week is a long time. So let's talk next week and see what's going on. Pat Nevin.
By the way, the game was all right.
I know. I'm so sorry not to ask you about the game. The clock has killed me here and we've a few other bits and bobs to do.
I wouldn't even want to talk about the game, even though it was one of my favourite games I've been to in many, many years.
Mm.
And can I say, by the way, Liverpool fans out there, particularly those at the game, and the Chelsea fans at the game, well done. and every fan and everyone that's backed Ukraine, absolutely well done. And sometimes you have to be brave in times like this. I'm really happy about people being brave and just saying it damn clear, straight down the face of these people. The Russians, and certainly that cabal with Putin, you're absolutely in the wrong. We're all on your Ukraine side and we don't duck it.
Okay, Pat. Thanks a million. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Our football show coverage, as ever, brought to you by Sky. Don't miss Crystal Palace against Stoke in the FA Cup this Tuesday, live on Premier Sport.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Get more of the sports you love on Sports Extra with BT Sport and Premier Sports.